Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 7th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, Republican leadership in the Senate want to stop pending Clean Water Act rules they say could be burdensome to agriculture. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports that pork producers are poised to increase herd sizes in 2015. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Country Financial, hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates on both the federal crop insurance program and the Farm Bill, as well as how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let's see how futures are currently trading. Hard red winter March wheat settled there at 620 down 11 and 1 quarter. May at 623 and a half settled down 11 and 3 quarters. Soft March wheat settled 579 and a half down 12 and a quarter. May 584 down 12. March corn settled at 396 and a quarter down 8 and 3 quarters. May 404 and 3 quarters down 8 and 3 quarters. July, 411 and a half, down 8 and 3 quarters. December, 420 and a quarter, down 8. January soybeans settled at 1052 and 3 quarters, up 1 and 3 quarters. March, 1056 and a quarter, up a half. May, 1061 and a half, unchanged. July, 1065 and 3 quarters, down a quarter. November, 1025, down 3 and 3 quarters. January soybean meal settled at 368.50 down 230. January soybean oil settled at 32.98. It was up 29 cents. And those are this afternoon's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says the majority of Brazil's grain and oilseed crops are still in very good shape today, with plenty of subsoil moisture to carry on normal crop development. But northeastern Brazil will see below average precipitation during the next 2 weeks. The region includes Bahia, much of central and northern Minas Gerais, and Espírito Santo. Those areas will receive an insignificant amount of rain and experience warm temperatures, creating steadily drying conditions. Corn and soybeans may be stressed, but only for the more immature crops. Net drying will occur from southern Mato Grosso and northern Mato Grosso do Sul into Sao Paulo and southern Minas Gerais during the next 10 days, resulting in firmer topsoil. For Argentina, rain will fall periodically in most of the main soybean, corn, sorghum, and peanut production areas during the next 2 weeks.
Support for agricultural weather comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Busey supports small businesses and entrepreneurs to bring vibrancy to the local economy. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group. She is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Wheat very much the leader to the downside today.
Well, it certainly was, and it's been the leader to the upside, so you would expect that that might happen. You know, the extreme cold temperatures, I think, have played themselves out. And worries over winter kill at this time of year are not really too common. And I think some of the snow that fell certainly helped allay some of that, but definitely the leader to the downside.
Meanwhile, we're rolling down the tracks to Monday and four major reports. If you include the wheat seedings report, the winter wheat seedings report, is everybody positioned about where they need to be by now?
Well, I would think most people are prepared, you know, for whatever the market might do. And if you look over, I looked at 8 years and 15 years worth of reports, and you know, over the last 8 years, both corn and beans have had some pretty wild moves on this Monday's report. The biggest drop in corn was 52 cents and the biggest gain 37. In beans, 70 cents and the biggest gain in 50 was 59 cents. So if you look over 14 or over 15 reports, this for corn is the most volatile report of the year on the day of the report. But the volatility 2 weeks later is the lowest compared to the other 12 reports we get in the year. And on beans, it's the second most volatile report. By 2 weeks after, the volatility is the lowest, with 11 other reports ahead of it with higher percentages of volatility. So you can tell that the big buildup is coming, you know, to all of this. And with the expectations, for the December corn stocks to be larger, bean stocks to be larger than last year, wheat stocks to be just slightly larger, on the grain stocks report, crop being bigger than what they're thinking, it's going to be bigger than what the November report would have said. And same thing with the bean crop, about the same as where USDA was at. So, but the carryout side is interesting because they're expecting a lower carryout in corn, a lower carryout in beans, and a slightly higher carryout in wheat. So you can see where there could be a lot of volatility.
Well, I guess the lower carryout in soybeans is warranted because demand has been pretty good.
Oh, demand's been absolutely fantastic, and especially when you look at the fact that we have the dollar at 92. Mm-hmm. I think the demand has just been great. But now there's been some talk during the beginning of this week and up to today that export business is really beginning to back off. So we'll see. That would be kind of a typical situation for us, you know, a very strong export market as we come into the end of the year and then as we get into the beginning of the next year. Have it back off for a while.
Well, we have bean harvest and power now, so I would think it wouldn't be too much longer.
Oh, I would think so. You know, the early beans are coming in anywhere from close to 22 to 58 bushels to the acre, which I think is, you know, I shouldn't say think, but that's very respectable for down there on an early crop bean. And we'll start to see some you know, implications, I guess, that we're going to actually get some competition from them. But as of the moment, you know, everybody just continues to look to China to see if China is going to continue to buy and push this market higher.
Meanwhile, we continue to watch the relationship between oil and ethanol as we try to divine if oil continues to collapse, will ethanol follow?
Well, I tell you, it's scary. We saw production drop 2% now as of the end of the week of January the 2nd. And, you know, there's a lot of, when you look at that, I look at that, the whole crude oil price drop, Dave, you know, as if OPEC has a target and they've got the fracking company's faces right on it, you know, because when they held that meeting on Thanksgiving Day and said that they were not going to reduce their production, you knew that there was something going on here. And, you know, from a positive side for all of us, we're paying less for fuel. Most people have more disposable income in the U.S. and even in the foreign countries, you know, where oil is priced in U.S. dollars, but there's a lot of negatives. There's less need for ethanol. We remember 2009 way too clearly. And I think the more far-reaching situation is that we could have a large drop in employment. You're seeing already all over the news where people in the fracking industry are losing their jobs. People actually in the big oil industry are losing their jobs. We added about 600,000 jobs to the natural gas and oil industry over the last 2 years. And part of the problem is with the fracking, big oil isn't drilling because it costs so much to drill and then have a dry well. And so you know, this is like a double-edged sword we've got going on here. Actually, I looked it up. There's 9.8 million people directly or indirectly employed by oil and natural gas in the United States. So, also really detrimental to countries like Russia. You know, we've seen the ruble falling apart. Venezuela, which has really turned its back on most everything except for their oil income. And so it could have a long-reaching effect when you look at the bigger picture about the world economy.
You know, you look at world oil demand, and you've got to say it's lower because of all the countries in recession. And then here in the United States, you look at the population. We're an aging population, and older people don't drive as much.
That is absolutely the truth. And, you know, and then, of course, we all become very conscious of mileage. And the higher the miles your car gets, the less fuel it has to consume. And we, of course, have electric cars coming in and everything else. So you're right. It's not going to be the boom ages, you know, like from the 70s. There's no question about that.
Let's have a word on livestock.
Yep. A word?
A word.
Turn your stomach inside out every day. Let's see once here. You know, we've seen a rebound, of course, in livestock, which was expected. It seemed as if it was more money movement due to the oil situation that was really depressing that market rather than real fundamentals for the market. When you look at the feeder cattle, it's pretty amazing because, you know, we were up $10.79 in cash the day before yesterday, $3.33 yesterday, $1.43 today. So we've got an $8 differential between cash and where the futures are on the feeder cattle side of things. And then you've got the hog market, which is made a little bit of a rebound, you know, and it's interesting when you look at the cattle and the feeder cattle market now, they have changed the limits in feeder cattle to 450 with an expanded limit of 675. Mm-hmm. If one of the two contracts that lead the complex end up at limit, and they actually have expanded limits now on live cattle too and gone from 300 to an expanded limit of 450 there too if just one of the front 2 months finishes at limit. So that changes the complexity of that market, and it changes some of the, it makes people a little hesitant to begin with until they get a better feel for how they think it may or may not react.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
In agricultural news, new Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says his caucus will go after the administration's proposed Clean Water Act jurisdiction rule this year. McConnell is referring to a rule proposed jointly by the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers that would clarify the scope of the Clean Water Act's jurisdiction over the nation's waters and wetlands. Republicans and some Democrats have called the proposal a radical expansion of the agency's authority and warned it could cripple agricultural, ranching, and other industries. The Federal Aviation Administration yesterday issued permits to use drones to monitor crops. It is the first time permission has been granted to companies involved in agriculture. The exemptions to the current ban on commercial drone flights were granted to Advanced Aviation Solutions in Star, Idaho for crop scouting. Advanced Aviation Solutions plans to use its 1.5-pound fixed-wing EB drone to make photographic measurements of farm fields, determine the health of crops, and look for pests. Monsanto today says that its earnings fell 34% in its first fiscal quarter as South American farmers cut back on planting corn, reducing demand for the company's biotech-enhanced seeds. Monsanto said its business was also affected by reduced cotton planting in Australia. The St. Louis-based company reported a profit of $243 million, or 50 cents a share, down from $363 million, or 69 cents a share in the prior year. The agriculture products company's revenue fell more than 8% to $2.87 billion in the period. Monsanto expects full-year earnings in the range of $5.75 to $6 per share. Official figures show the Eurozone is in a deflation mode as consumer prices fell in December. Eurostat, the EU's statistics agency, says today that prices in what was the 18-country Eurozone were 0.2% lower in December than the previous year. The main reason behind the slide from the 0.3% inflation rate recorded in November was plunging oil prices, which is being passed on to consumers at the pump. The U.S. trade deficit fell in November to the lowest level in 11 months as crude oil imports dropped to a two-decade low. The Commerce Department says the trade deficit narrowed to $39 billion in November, down 7.7% from October. Exports fell 1% to $196.4 billion. Imports dropped even faster, falling 2.2% to $235.4 billion. The volume of crude oil imported in November hit the lowest level since 1994, while the average price dropped to a two-year low. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Pork producers are gearing up to provide customers with what they want, and that is more pork and more bacon. Todd Gleason has the facts.
The nation's hog producers have expanded the breeding herd by 4% and have already farrowed 3% more sows this past fall, says Purdue University Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. The larger number of young pigs will begin to move pork production above year previous levels in early 2015, and he thinks that expansion could reach 7% higher by the end of 2015.
The breeding herd has grown by over 212,000 animals over the last year, and that's mostly in the center of the country. The Western Corn Belt breeding herd increased by 105,000 head, with Missouri rising by 55,000 animals, Iowa by 40,000, and Minnesota by 10,000 head. The second largest growth region was down in the Southern Plains, and there they're still recovering, of course, from that long-term drought. Both Texas and Oklahoma added 20,000 animals to the breeding herd over the last year.
The third region of concentrated growth was the Central Plains, with Nebraska adding 15,000 animals and Kansas adding 10,000. Well, despite the growth, serious uncertainty remains. PED appears to be continuing to cause death losses for the industry and remains one of the ongoing uncertainties for baby pig survival this winter. Clearly, thinks Hurt, PED can still have impacts on the final 2015 pork supplies.
The most recent information we have from last October and November suggests death losses are coming up as the cold weather months start to set in, and we recognize them to be about 3 to 4%. And if those 3 to 4% for October, November are valid, then those are about the same as what we saw in October, November a year earlier in 2013. As we look forward to how is the PED going to impact death loss, it appears the number of pigs per litter is actually going to be higher by about 2 to 3% for the first half of 2015.
Here's how that translates into pounds of meat. Pork production is expected to be up 1% in the first quarter of 2015, but 5% higher in the second quarter. That second quarter increase will come from the 4% larger pig crop last fall and 1% higher increased marketing weights. Pork production in the last half of 2015 is expected to be 5 to 7% higher, driven by 3 to 4% larger farrowings this winter and spring, and by higher weaning rates and by small increases in market weights. For the year, these factors will provide about 5% more pork. Again, here's Chris Hurt.
pork consumers really had to bear much of the cost of the PED virus, which came at a time when pork supplies were already low due to an earlier period of extremely high feed prices. Retail pork prices reached a peak of $4.22 a pound back in September, according to USDA, and have been dropping since. The general trend toward more affordable or lower-priced pork in the grocery store should continue throughout 2015.
The theme for pork production in 2015 then will be to strive to gain control over PED death losses and to continue to expand the breeding herd. It's likely the breeding herd will continue to expand another 2-4% over the course of the calendar year. Producers may express some disappointment that the extraordinary profits of 2014 will not continue, but Hertz says they should also realize 2014 was an aberration year that may only happen once in a lifetime. Most will be happy to accept 2014 and 2015 as the best two consecutive profit years in modern hog production history. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Pete Peterson of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon.
I would think producers are hunkered down with a brisk 2 degrees outside. Am I right?
Grain movement has been slow the last couple of days, no doubt about it.
A question I have in generally, are producers in old crop about sold where they are historically for the Clymers area, or are they holders of more than usual?
No. Producers, I guess I would consider us no different than across the nation. I think consumers are, producers are way behind the last couple of years as far as the marketing. The government report coming out on Monday will probably give us an indication of what direction guys want to jump.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that quarterly grain stocks report. As you talk to other analysts there at Clymers, what is the opinion?
Kind of a mixed bag. I think between the two commodities, corn and beans, right now, I guess I would lean, and most of us are leaning maybe just a little bit to the neutral side on the corn, maybe a little bit bearish on the bean side at this point in the game.
So are we talking about ending stocks or quarterly grain here?
Ending stocks in general, just for the simple fact that, we think that the size of the crop on the corn side is not too far from being accurate. The beans could be bumped up a little bit. A big question mark on both being demand.
Where are producers in new crop marketings?
New crop is, I think, even, some are to the point in time, I think, where a little bit of reality setting in, especially with higher input costs for the new crop year, with the recently prepays being made. So that reality has forced producers to get covered, but right now, very hesitant.
What are the popular methods for marketing at this time?
Still futures only, hedge-derived contracts for the next crop year, just for the simple fact, as far as logistics and or delivery points, still being flexible.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices then today, Pete?
Sure. Right now, at Clymers, we're at 12 under the March at 384 at this point in the game.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, you bet. Bye.
That's Pete Peterson of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Hey, have you had an opportunity to go to this website yet, WILLAG.org? I bring it up because it's all brand shiny new. We just unveiled a new version today. Go on over there and check it out. And while you're there, if you haven't subscribed to our Aggie newsletter, you can do so in the right navigation window. That's at willag.org. It's National Tempura Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1608, a fire destroyed Jamestown, Virginia, leaving colonists little protection from the winter elements. Later that year, a severe drought, what became known as the Starving Time, killed 154 of the colony's 214 people. In 1784, the first U.S. seed business was established by David Landreth in Philadelphia. In 1827, Sir Sanford Fleming was born. A Scottish surveyor While in charge of the initial survey for the Canadian Pacific Railroad, the first Canadian railway to span the continent, he realized the problems of coordinating such a long railway. That led him to the idea of time zones, which led to the adoption of the present system of time zones and earned him the title of Father of Standard Time. In 1830, the Maryland-based Baltimore and Ohio Railway, one of the oldest railroads in the U.S., officially began service. On that first day of operation, the passengers were not transported by a locomotive, but rather pulled by horse-drawn carts on the new track. In 1958, Ant Farms went on sale for the first time. And in 1970, Max Gasker, whose farm in upstate New York played host to the original Woodstock Festival, was sued for $35,000 in property damages by neighboring farmers. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us for a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Mostly, Brazil has had what would be called ideal soybean weather with not very many hiccups. But we have a little bit of a hiccup over the next couple of weeks, don't we?
Well, the question is it perceived or is it real? That's the big question, and I think that it's more of a perception rather than an actuality, at least at this point. It's all speculation about whether or not the crops are going to be hurt later this month going into February. Certainly the weather pattern we're in right now is one that will go for at least another 10 days, and some models suggest a couple of weeks. And what that pattern is going to do is going to reduce rainfall in much of Brazil and enough so that the topsoil will firm up and become very short of moisture in another week and a half or so. Daily highs will be in the 80s and lower to middle 90s, and that will, as you know, evaporate moisture fairly quickly. So by the time we get out a little bit beyond mid-month, we'll be running very short on topsoil moisture. But with all the rain that has fallen this season so far, the subsoil is still going to be favorably moist, and that'll buy us another week at least of drying conditions if we have to endure that. And so I think that it's going to be until late this month before we actually see any realistic stress that would hurt the production potential outside of the two northeasternmost states of Bahia and Minas Gerais. Those two are going to have some issues, but they only produce a very small portion of the crop. And most likely, whatever yield losses occur there will be countered by excellent yields in other parts of the country. So I'm really having a hard time buying into a big problem in Brazil right now. Certainly, if the pattern prevails into late January, early February, there will be some issue.
All right, let's look at the corn and soybean belt. Yeah, well, might as well throw wheat in there, too, because there's been a lot of talk about the potential in this week of winter wheat kill.
Yes, and I just finished a story just a moment ago, actually, and basically we're talking about less than 1% of the U.S. wheat crop will be vulnerable to some damage tonight. We actually have 3 nights' worth of bitter cold coming up across the region from southern Nebraska and northern Kansas into southern Indiana and a few spots in Kentucky. But there's snow on the ground in much of Missouri, so the crop damage potentials there will be somewhat subdued. It's really southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana that have the highest potential of seeing temperatures near and below zero tonight and also staying snow-free. And in that region, we could lose some crop. I don't want to make it sound like we're not. Certainly if you're a producer in that region it ends up being damaged, it's a bad thing. But relative to the nation's total production, it's not going to be a huge event. If we step back and look at the bigger picture, though, we've lost some other wheat in other parts of the country in the November bitter cold event that occurred. Some hard red wheat was hurt back then, also some wheat in the northern plains. So if we keep just nipping at some of this production, eventually it might have a bigger impact.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.